Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I'm your host, Clayton Fletcher, in sunny Isles, Florida, where I am currently on vacation, but of course, right in the middle of my trip to Florida to get a little bit of fun in the sun and a little bit of an escape from the New York City weather. Of course, right in the middle of this week of supposed relaxation, mayhem broke out as the World Series of Poker finally released the schedule for the 2022 WSOP. I'm going to have some thoughts on that schedule in a few minutes, but first, I wanted to thank you all for your comments on last week's episode. If you haven't heard that one, I recommend you go back and listen. I started at day 1A of the 2021 World Series of Poker and started talking about a hand that was played on PokerGo. Actually, that hand was at Doyle Brunson's table, but it did not involve Doyle in any way. Of course, we're all hoping to see Doyle this summer when the WSOP picks up again in its normal time slot, June and July. But yeah, of course, I'm super excited to get into the schedule. But yeah, regarding the hand that we discussed last week, which again was from day 1A of last year's main event, I suggested on the podcast that we might want to try a blocking bet on the river. And our good friend Danny Sprung, Danny's a great follow, 343 on Twitter. That's you spell out the word three, use the number four, and then spell out three again. Danny was our guest a few weeks ago, and he talked about his love of fooling around with Pio Solver or PO Solver. I still don't know which way to say it. And of course, analyzing poker hands, which he does sometimes just for fun. And as a friend of mine, he decided to run the theoretical blocking bet that I recommended last week through the solver. And well, things didn't work out so good for your boy Clayton on this one. As it turns out, the solver would only use a blocking bet about 3% of the time. And this was on the river. So if you remember last week's hand, Simon Casserly has ace king on an ace high board that is both straightening and flushing. And he ends up getting bluffed out of the pot. Spoiler alert, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, sorry about that. That's not how spoiler alert works anyway, is it? I'm supposed to say it before I reveal what you're not supposed to know. But yeah, I thought it might make sense to put in the blocking bet there on the end, which Simon Casserly did not do. It turns out the solver doesn't really agree with that play either, but it does jam about 58% of its range, which seems really high. One thing that helps a lot is that Simon has the ace of clubs and there are three clubs on the board. So in the world of PO, it is better to go ahead and shove as a bluff, I guess, with top pair when we are holding the ace of clubs. It's hard to imagine getting called by worse in that scenario. But Danny did point out that my play would have worked against him, but not against the solver. So that made me chuckle. And we always appreciate the interaction from not only Danny, but from all of you. And the best way to reach me is just by tweeting me at Clayton Comic. Let me know what you think of my analysis and the plays that I see being worthwhile here on the podcast. And it's especially interesting to me to go through hands that I was not actually involved in because, of course, I have no emotional connection to Simon Casserly or his opponent, whose name I already forgot from last week's episode. So that proves that I don't really care about these people and I'm just trying to analyze the poker. And perhaps whether I mean to or not, I might actually have a little bit of an emotional connection to hands that I actually played myself. So hopefully I don't, but that does happen to the best of us and certainly could cloud our judgment from time to time. All right, now let's get to it. The World Series of Poker daily event schedule has been announced. You can find it yourself on WSOP.com. Of course, the main things that you need to know, the kind of the highlights, we're just go through a few highlights today about this upcoming WSOP. I'm hoping to do a deeper dive into the full schedule with our dear friend, Derek Killingbird Tenbush, who at this point, it's basically a tradition that we do that every year right around the time when the schedule comes out. We weren't able to connect this week, partly with me traveling and everything else, but I do want to get him on hopefully next week to go over this schedule as we always do and try to start getting you guys excited about the summer to come. Now, of course, there will be other tournament series taking place on the Las Vegas Strip, notably the Wynn, which always does a first-class job, and the Venetian, which actually now has a new owner. Something called the Apollo Group has purchased the Venetian from its former owner, which was a corporation called Las Vegas Sands. So a lot of things changing hands in and around Las Vegas, so I'm sure that will continue. But getting into this schedule, I want to start off by saying I'm excited. Now, you guys know it is the location of my much-publicized victimhood, where someone came into my room when I was not at home and burglarized me, took my laptop, my passport, some credit cards, and other things that I would really like to have back. And that was all at Bally's. So I've been on this podcast many times talking smack about Bally's and how they didn't care, their security team didn't care, the police didn't care. It was basically, my loss. And they blamed me. They actually did victim blaming and said it was my fault because I didn't lock my door, which is ridiculous because I wasn't inside the room. How can you lock a hotel room door from the outside? They don't work that way. So I don't need to rehash all those details again, but I really haven't set foot in the hotel area anyway of Bally's since then. I have played a couple of times in their poker room, which, by the way, is being upgraded as we speak, and they're changing the name of the place to the Horseshoe. So there used to be a Horseshoe downtown, and one thing the Horseshoe was known for was taking big bets, having like 100 times odds on craps, and not having any limits. So I'll be interested to see whether or not this Horseshoe follows that tradition or not. If so, it will certainly be a very popular place for high rollers to play craps on the Strip. The whole World Series, everything this summer is going to be on the Strip. Maybe they'll do something at Golden Nugget. They might do something at the Orleans, but it seems like all the action is going to be right there on Las Vegas Boulevard, where in recent years they are charging for parking. So it remains to be seen whether WSOP players who have cars will need to pay every day to park their vehicles at Bally's Horseshoe. It's not Bally's anymore, the Horseshoe. That would be such a PR nightmare and such a money grab. Would it surprise me? No. But I want to try to stay positive because I am excited. The convention area at Bally's / Paris is actually substantially bigger than that of the Rio, which, as we all know, was mammoth. They are saying they expect to fit 600 poker tables in this convention area, which is way more than they ever had in the World Series years ago. I believe the most they ever had was like 380. I'm not sure why, that might be wrong, but that number is in my head. So we could be able to handle record fields. And best of all, they are not anticipating forcing us to wear masks while we're walking in the hallways or show a vaccination card everywhere we go. All of that seems to be in the rear view mirror. Knock on wood, Clayton, while you say that. I'm excited to just get back to quote unquote normal, a fresh start at a new / old / new venue. And for the first time ever, the World Series of Poker will take place on the Las Vegas Strip. Now, is that going to attract more recreational tourist types who happen to be in town and they say, oh, heck, I'll try that? I don't really know if that's going to be an effect or not, but we do know the Rio is a bit out of the way and not that many players would be wandering around the convention area there to like stumble upon the World Series of Poker. You really needed to be looking for it in order to find it. But the convention area between Bally's and Paris is actually much more centrally located, and there is a chance that we could see a higher percentage of recreational or amateur players, tourists, weekend warriors, whatever you want to call them. That always makes for more fun. For me, I don't even care about the disparity in skill level. I just would rather play with people who aren't so darn serious all the time. So I'm excited for that. Just a few more highlights about the upcoming WSOP. You know I'm going to start with what I always thought was called the Mystery Bounty, but it turns out that name is not being used for what was originally going to be called the Mystery Bounty back in 2020 before you know what happened and ruined everyone's life for a while. Then the Wynn started doing Mystery Bounties, and they seem to have, I don't know that they've actually trademarked the name, but the term Mystery Bounty is certainly associated with Wynn Poker at this point. So the World Series of Poker, in their infinite wisdom, is calling their version of this $1,000 buy-in event with three starting days the $1 million Bounty. So the only information they're giving us about it is that, much like at the Wynn, the bounties will start on day two. So the original Mystery Bounty that the World Series of Poker was planning before the coronavirus shutdown did not specify that bounties would begin on day two. It actually was supposed to happen from the beginning of the tournament. So maybe for logistical reasons, or now that they've seen how smoothly things run at the Wynn Poker Room when they do their bounty tournaments, their mystery bounty tournaments, they are now copying that format and starting them on day two. But the only bounty that is guaranteed, according to the press release, is the $1 million prize for one lucky player who busts an opponent on day two. Now, this is the kind of stuff I dream about, you know, just winning $1 million just for being lucky. It's kind of like combining a poker tournament with a scratch-off lottery ticket, and I am 1,000% here for it. I can't wait to play. I tried several bullets this past fall at the Wynn in their various mystery bounty tournaments and never did manage to make day two. So here's hoping that my luck will improve this summer at the Horseshoe, where I guarantee, unless I'm dead, I will be playing in the $1,000 million bounty July 2nd through 4th. That same weekend marks the beginning of the main event, which they're going back to four starting days. Now, last year, obviously, they changed everything last minute once the government opened up the airports to European travelers. Was supposed to be four starting days. They expanded it to six. Now we are going back to four. But if you guys remember, back in 2019, there were actually only three starting days for the main event. So it's going back to 4th of July weekend, starting on Sunday, actually. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are the starting dates for the main event, beginning July 3rd. So that will take us basically to the end of the series, almost. The final tournament this year is going to be also a brand new thing, which I think is a great idea. The Tournament of Champions, July 18th through 20th. So the way this works, it's $1 million free roll. And the only way you can enter is by being a bracelet winner this year or a gold ring winner in the 2022 WSOP circuit season. So for those of you who are circuit grinders or have been playing in the circuit events online or what have you, if you want a ring or if you win a bracelet this summer, you can play in $1 million free roll, which is so awesome. I love this idea. It says in the press release that you'll get ultimate bragging rights. Now, I don't know about that, but it should be a good time. A pretty tough field, I would assume, as well. A couple other highlights before I get to another hand from last year's main event. They're bringing back the Flip and Go. I played in the Flip and Go last year. It's so crazy. You get dealt three cards, and you have to go all in with two of them pre-flop, and then, you know, you just you hope that you win your table. Everybody's all in, one winner, automatically in the money, and they're all going to be live. Last year, you could enter the WSOP Flip and Go either on GG Poker or I think maybe even on WSOP.com. But now this year, it's all going to be live. So you have to be there. That one is June 12th. It's going to be fun. What's great about this format is that there's almost no skill involved in getting into the money. So that means if you are a skillful player and you happen to get into the money, you might end up at a table with seven or even eight recreational opponents who just got lucky to get into the money. So yeah, I like when we add more gamble to poker. You know, I think poker was getting a little bit too solved and a little bit too serious and a little bit unfair to the recreational players that we all agree we need to keep happy in the game so they keep coming back for more. And things like the mystery bounty and the flip and go, like this is right up my alley. I like to gamble, so this makes me happy, but it's also for the greater cause. It's just better if more recreational players have a chance to make it into the money or to have a big score. It's just good for everybody. So that's a great thing. I'm glad they're bringing that one back. I did not make day two of that one last year, but I think I fired three times, which is nothing compared to some of the players I heard in the registration line talking about how they fired 27, 28 bullets just trying to make day two of the flip and go, which seems kind of silly. The Crazy Eights is gone. It's no longer Crazy Eights. Now it's 777, Lucky Sevens. It seems very similar to the Crazy Eights tournament, except that now the buy-in is $777 with a $777,777 guaranteed first place prize. So this seems to be, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it feels like a departure from the relationship between the WSOP and 888 Poker, which is actually the software that WSOP.com, New Jersey, Nevada, and other places use. So maybe this is just the end of a licensing agreement that they had, or perhaps it's a sign that the website's about to change. I'm not really sure, and I don't want to speculate too much about that. But the last thing I want to mention is they're bringing back the Hall of Fame Bounty Tournament, which is a good time. It's an homage to the Poker Hall of Fame that started in 1979. So that's why the buy-in is 1979. They're free-rolling. Anyone who is in the Hall of Fame and still alive can play in this tournament for free. And if you bust one of those players, you collect a bounty corresponding to the year that that player was inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame. Or in some cases, it might not even be a player. It's anyone who is in the Hall of Fame, be it a broadcaster or some sort of revolutionary idea man. Perhaps you will sit at a table with Maury Eskandani himself. Those are just some highlights. Oh yeah, one more. The opening weekend, you know, they like to do a big blowout in the opening weekend. So this year, it's a $500 buy-in with a $5 million guaranteed prize pool, which is just absolutely ridiculous. They're calling it the housewarming, which is kind of cute because we are saying goodbye to the Rio and we've moved to a new home. I will try to shake off some of my bad memories from the old Bally's and turn over a new leaf with the horseshoe this summer. All right, so let's do another hand, shall we? This one is also from the 300, 500, 500 level of last year's $10,000 main event No Limit Hold'em Championship, the last one ever to be held at the Rio All Suites Resort Hotel Casino and Spa. All right, so it's a different table, not the same table we talked about last time around. We have a player named Frederick Karam, who is in early position. He's under the gun plus one, or as I like to call it, second position. He's got 101,000 in his stack, and he makes it 1,300 to go. The action folds around to our big blind, who is Eliran Yamin of Israel, and he defends his big blind with a call, and he's holding the ace of spades, eight of spades, and he's got Karam covered by just a bit. He's sitting on a stack of 125,000 thousand. Now, I did not tell you what Frederick Karam is holding, which means we are going to be playing this hand from the perspective of Eliran Yamin, who has the ace of spades, eight of spades. So these two players see a flop, and with 3,400 in the middle and the effective stack of just under 100,000, we have a very large SPR, something like 27 or 28. So a very, very big stack to pot ratio. And the flop comes king of diamonds, eight of clubs, deuce of hearts. So king, eight, deuce, rainbow. Hero in this hand, Eli Yamin, is first to act with middle pair, top kicker. Note that he does not have a backdoor flush draw. It's king, eight, deuce with no spades, and we've got the ace, eight of spades. So Yamin checks, as he should always do, heads up, out of position when you have defended your blind. The solvers say we literally never lead. Karam bets 1,200 into the 3,400 pot, so a bit of a down bet here. And Yamin decides to call. I'm totally fine with this. I don't think we need to be check raising in this situation. We've got so many chips. We may as well just control the pot. Obviously, we don't want to fold. We've got middle pair with an ace kicker. It might be good. It can improve. We have five outs to improve if we're not ahead. So yeah, I'm all for the call here. Pretty standard stuff so far. So the pot is now 5,800, and the turn comes the tray of diamonds. So our board is now king, eight, deuce, tray with two diamonds. And again, the action is on Eli Yamin, first to act. And again, he checks over to Karam. I think this is a fine play. I have no problem with this move at all. And I'm also happy to lead out small, planning to fold to a raise. Doing so could get action from a hand like 10-8 or jack-8 or 9-8 or 8-7. Eights that we have dominated and we'd like to get value from. It could also potentially get a fold from a hand like pocket 9s or pocket 10s. If not now, then on the river. Obviously, we are not trying to get a king or better to fold, but that doesn't mean we should never bet. I think a mixed strategy here is probably correct. Sometimes betting about half the pot on the turn and sometimes just checking it over. I don't think there's much of a case to be made here for a very large bet. Anything higher than 3/4 just seems excessive because, again, you're never getting a king to fold. In this day and age, people just, when they have top pair, they just station. And I'm sure that Frederick Karam is no different. So I'm glad he doesn't lead big here on 4th Street. He checks over and Karam bets big. He puts in 5,000 into the 5,800 pot. All right. Decision time for Eli Yamin. So we've got second pair, top kicker. It's a very large bet to have to call with such a modest holding. But the question is, do we think that Yamin would make this kind of bet as a bluff? Well, I mean, the answer is, of course, he could sometimes. Maybe if he has a hand like ace, jack of diamonds, where he now picked up a flush draw on the turn. Remember, the king of diamonds on the flop and now the tray of diamonds on the turn. So that's certainly a possibility. He could also just be barreling with a hand like ace 10 or something with no pair, no draw. But, you know, the thing that I may not have mentioned about Frederick Karam and that many of you might not know from his name, the guy is Norwegian. So there's always a greater than average chance that your opponent is bluffing when he comes from Scandinavia. Try to keep that in mind. Now, in watching this hand play out on PokerGo, I tried to study Frederick Karam and pretending that I didn't know whether he was bluffing or not and try to pick up body language, a tell of some kind. I have to give credit where it's due, and really, as a person that considers himself above average at reading body language and live reads and tells and things like that, I couldn't pick up anything. really just staring at him and trying to imagine that I were sitting in Eli Yaman's seat, trying to figure out whether or not I'm being bluffed or pressured to fold here, or whether my opponent is just going for massive value by betting almost the pot on 4th Street. It was really hard. I could not pick up anything physically or otherwise that would lead me to lean one way or the other. So no help there, at least not from this supposed body language expert. So what to do? What to do? I mean, as Yaman, you have to ask yourself, if I call on the turn, am I also willing to call a large bet on the river? And if the answer is no, maybe it's better to just save that 5K on the turn. If the eights end up being good and our opponent bets big again on the river and gets us off our hand, then we are pretty exploitable, that all one needs to do is triple barrel me and I will pretty much fold unless I have a king, which, let's be real, there's a pretty strong chance that I don't have a king or better in this spot. So I'm not sure how much of that thought process actually went through Eli Yaman's head, but he did decide to call the 5,000 bet, and now we have a pot a-brewing. There's 15,800 in the middle, and the river comes the four of hearts, no flush, the final board of king, eight, deuce, tray, four. So the ace five got there, and the 6-5 came in, but that's all. And the action is on hero. 15,800 in the middle. Hero ends up with just a pair of eights on king, eight, deuce, tray, four. And I think, again, there's a case for betting on the river. The solvers generally tell us that we don't donk lead enough. We don't bet out enough. We tend to play in flow, as we used to say. I don't know if I hear that anymore, but you're always checking to the razor and let whoever the aggressor is in the hand continue to be the aggressor. I think in this situation, there is merit to leading out small, maybe a one-third pot. You can get action from worse, possibly a hand like pocket sevens or a worse eight. I'm not sure if pocket sevens or a worse eight would bet 5,000 on the turn, but assuming that they are at least sometimes in the Norwegian player's range, then betting and trying to get value from those hands makes sense here. But the big advantage to that smaller bet is that you might successfully block your opponent from betting a larger amount that you were planning to call. So that last part is crucial. Like, if you're not going to call on the river anyway, then number one, maybe you shouldn't have called on the turn, which, by the way, is not to say you can never call on the turn and then not call on the river. But I think when the card is as innocuous as this river, the four, you need to be checking, planning to call again with second pair. Not much has changed. If you were good on 4th Street, you're good now. The only thing that has changed is now instead of firing two barrels, your opponent would be now firing three if he bets again, which, of course, we know that those are the rarest of all bluffs, but not in Norway. So what to do? Do we want to lead here? I guess all things considered, it's fine to just check and plan to call most bets on the river. And I think that's what Eli decides to do. He checks again. And Frederik Karam, with only about 90,000 remaining in his stack, puts in a third of that stack, 30,000, into the 15,800 pot. Now what do you want to do with your pair of eights, Eli Yaman? We have played the entire hand passively, and now our opponent is betting two times the pot. What to do? I don't know. I think that in this situation, it just you have to be right so often if you use your ace eight as a bluff catcher. I mean, this is about as polarized bet as you will ever see. This player is representing a hand like three kings, maybe a lucky ace five of diamonds or something like that. But yeah, he's not making this play with ace king. No way, no how, no one does that. So it's either a big hand or a nothing burger. And Eli Yaman makes the call for almost two times the pot with just second pair ace kicker And sure enough, Frederick Karam turns over the Queen of Diamonds, Ten of Hearts. He missed everything and just bet, and really put out what I think is a great and tremendous effort to try to get us to fold, but the Israeli was just too sticky. A really interesting hand, and maybe something we don't consider often enough, is overbetting. But when you overbet, you have to be bluffing sometimes. And I think that because Frederick Karam would like to make this play with pocket kings or pocket eights or possibly even pocket deuces, although I'm not sure he'd be opening that hand from second position in the first place. But yeah, so some of the sets, or of course the occasional runner straight with ace 5 or 6-5, certainly would like to be able to bet this big when I have those hands. So why don't we also bet it every so often as a bluff? I don't think every player that's listening to this podcast has this gear of 2x potting the river with a queen high, or even double barreling. You know, we have no equity on the flop, basically. King 8 deuce, when I'm holding queen 10, I might just one and done, maybe a little continuation bet, and then give up. It's not like he picked up equity on the turn and then bet big, and then bet really big on the end. So I actually like this play by Frederick Karam, not if he does it every single time he's involved in a pot, but obviously he picked the wrong customer, because Eli Yaman was having none of it. Hero called it and then ended up winning over 37,000 in this hand and taking the chip lead at his day one table. That'll do it for this episode. Guys, if you're still looking for a website where you can learn so much about poker for such little money, visit tournamentpokeredge.com and look at our videos. We've got Andrew Brokus, Alex Fitzgerald, Jared Smith, Colin Moshman, and so much more. And for as little as $25 a month, you can have access to our entire catalog of incredible videos to help you get ready for your trip to the Horseshoe Hotel and Casino in fabulous Las Vegas this summer. And now you can save $10 off your first month's membership just by using the promo code PODCAST at checkout. So for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, I'm Clayton Fletcher from sunny Florida. Thank you so much for listening.
Them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Lock in intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Baby, when it's loving, it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, whoa.